Magazine, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. It is Wednesday. It's the end of our broadcast week here. And it is the 25th. Of May in the year 2005. Alan Watt is with us tonight, and we'll start with our spiritual message. This is from A Course in Miracles. I'm going to do this one tonight. I had a couple or three of them here. Each day, each hour, every instant, I am choosing what I want to look upon, the sounds I want to hear, the witnesses to what I want to be the truth for me. You want to hear that one again? Each day, each hour, every instant, I am choosing what I want to look upon, the sounds I want to hear, the witnesses to what I want to be the truth for me. Alan, thanks for being here tonight.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Yeah.
Yes. So, what's up?
I guess there's a lot up because there's so much always going on. But I think everyone is concerned right now about the ID card coming out.
Well, I would hope everybody's concerned, Alan.
Yes, some are, you know, but I think the ones who are usually watching what's happening, they understand that the rest of the public, of course, are either oblivious to it, and therefore they'll accept it quite calmly when it comes along, as they would anything else, you know. But with the biometric scan, They really introduced that when they introduced the driving licenses in a lot of places. That was the same thing with the biometric reading of certain points in your face that the computer can then recognize at any time.
I think Georgia has already done it.
Quite a lot of places have done that already.
What are they doing in Canada?
The same thing. It's the same here. It's the same everywhere, you know.
I know, but are they requiring the biometrics?
They have for the driving license for quite a few years now.
Okay, what are the biometrics? Are we talking fingerprints? Are we talking retina scans?
No, the driving license up until now has just been the actual biometric photograph, the computerized photograph.
Oh, the digital thing.
Yes, it does do certain geometrical patterns between points in your face. So they can recognize it again once the computer has broken it down. So that's been in here for quite a few years, and in Britain and everywhere else.
How do they, facial recognition,
mm-hmm.
How do they use that, Alan? I mean, what's the deal with the...
It's, apart from the fact that the computer literally breaks down your face into numbers, really, these tiny little numbers.
Oh.
Zeros and ones, binary code. They also take points between your cheekbones, the distance between your eyes. All of that thing is being measured as that photograph is taken.
And what is the purpose for that?
I think the purpose of it all was to get us all used to it, so that when you move into the next stage of the ID card itself, it's no big deal, since you've already got that photograph already, you know.
I know, but what I don't understand is, what's the big deal, measuring the distance between our eyes, et cetera, et cetera?
It's a certain distance. When you get your photograph taken, there's a certain distance between you and the camera, which is computed into the whole thing, and it's so that they can positively identify you, even if you've had some facial features altered.
Oh, I see.
They can still measure between the eyes.
Like, you know, if you had a nose job or something, or,
yeah, mm-hmm,
or even a facelift or something, or,
yeah, or a chin implant.
Or a chin implant.
Yeah. So they can still take the rest of what's left and still positively say that's still that person, you know.
Do you think it's true that we all have doubles? Do you think there's anybody exactly like somebody else? Exactly.
Yeah, there are some like that, absolutely. I know that for a fact, yeah.
Okay, how do you know that for a fact?
I met someone who thought I was the other person. And it was the oddest thing that ever happened.
Did he talk funny like you?
I don't know, but I'll tell you.
Listen
to this little story.
Don't you think that was funny?
I had come down from Inverness in Scotland down to Stirling this morning, that one morning, and I'd brought a girlfriend down with me. And I got off in Stirling, and a woman shouted my name. And she said, Alan, and I said, who is this woman? She obviously knows me. And then she said, Alan, and then I still stood there with a puzzled expression, and she said, Alan Watson. I thought, well, she's so darn close, she must obviously, you know me somehow. And it turned out she was the next door neighbor of this guy called Alan Watson, who was married, lived next door to her, and had just left that morning on a trip up to Inverness.
Oh, my.
I had just come down
and
from Inverness.
And she saw you there with another woman.
And she, yeah, and she would not believe, she still...
Oh, boy.
...wouldn't believe me, and she came right up to me, too, and she still thought I was this other guy.
And you did, he did talk funny like you then.
Yes, he must have.
Well, he was from Scotland.
Isn't that weird, though? But that did happen, and it's the oddest thing.
Yeah, especially so close to home.
Yeah.
Well, I was reading an item today about this real ID,
mm-hmm,
and it was something some woman wrote, I think a doctor, but they're talking about a bit, that this, see, I went through my files, Alan,
uh-huh,
and this was from last year in October,
mm-hmm,
and it had something to do with a one of their intelligence bills they had passed.
Mm-hmm.
And this article told about the national ID that was buried in that was passed last October.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where all this biometrics and things, because, see, I haven't seen anything about it in this conference report that I wrote.
Uh-huh.
Well, of course, the thing is that they have given the Homeland Security Czar the authority to add any requirements that he wants to.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's something in this thing about building a wall or something in San Diego for illegal aliens, to stop them. I don't know what it's all about, but it is something about building a barrier 17 miles or something, and the Homeland Security Czar has total authority over this too, and in the process he has the right, the authority to just bypass any laws that are in force whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really, there's got to be a lot more to this than I'm reading in this report.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, it is a totalitarian position this man holds. He has all rights to do everything he wants, basically.
I want to remind our listeners of this, folks. in our website at sweetliberty.org, in the section titled America's New War or War on Americans, I think that's the section it's in. The New York Times featured, this was not long after 9/11 when they came out with the restructuring. You can read that in the Homeland Security section, by the way. What did they call it? The 21st century what, Alan? Something, the plans for restructuring. This.
Yeah,
anyway. The New York Times did a graph, not a graph, a flow chart, like if you're doing a family tree. What do they call that?
Yeah, it's a genealogy.
Okay, but this is the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
And what they showed, the pecking order, they showed the president. Underneath the president, they showed the Homeland Security czar. Underneath that, a big line, there was FEMA. And underneath FEMA, there was every single department and office in the U.S. government. So the Homeland Security czar would have authority over the FEMA director. And, of course, the puppet president would whatever he does. But the thing is, where they showed the U.S. Congress was up in the top left corner of this thing. On the page, and it wasn't connected to any feature at all. Not one part of the structure of the U.S. government. You're on the air.
Hi, Jackie. It's Eleanor. I just want to report that here in Hamilton, Ontario, the fuzzing is just terrible on shortwave. I can't make it out at all.
The what, honey?
The fuzzing.
Oh, my.
And the web is fine, but shortwave, I can't make you out here at all.
But the short wave is coming in fine.
No, the web is fine. The short wave has a major problem.
Oh, my.
At least here in this location. You know, it could be different other places.
And it's fuzzy, did you say, Eleanor?
Yeah, it sounds like over-modulation, but it's not.
Uh-huh. Oh, gosh, I'm so sorry about that.
So you may want to just ask your listeners to give you a couple of signal reports to see if it's extensive or not.
Yes, thanks, Eleanor.
Okay, bye-bye.
Maybe it'll clear up, honey.
Bye-bye.
Good to hear from you. Bye-bye. All right, folks, if you're listening on shortwave, and if you can hear this, maybe we could have a couple of calls. Give us a signal check to see how it's coming in. Alan, you have a shortwave there, don't you?
Yeah, it's actually over-modulating gear.
Well, I don't understand. She said it's fine on the Internet, on the website.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's just the short wave, I guess.
It's the short wave. But
it's a strong signal. Too strong, actually, and it's muffled because of that.
Now, how does that happen?
Over-modulation is simply too much gain from the incoming signal before they broadcast it. They've got to cut it back a bit, you know.
Who has to cut it back?
The broadcasting station.
The shortwave station?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because if it's coming in okay... Hi, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes, Jackie. This is Hank calling.
Hi, Hank.
Your signal is 300 cycles high, and you're overmodulated, dear.
Oh, God. Now, Hank, what does that mean? I mean, how does... You're a ham operator.
Like on your Grundig that you have there at home, that would be three single numbers up. Your actual frequency is 5073.
And what does that mean?
That means that either their finals in your broadcast have slipped up or their adjustment for exact frequency has slipped out of whack.
Whose adjustment would this be?
Beg your pardon?
Would this be adjustment from the short wave? The station.
Radio station, or unless you're having a frequency shift somehow or other in your tie between where you're broadcasting from and the radio.
Well, see, they're sending it directly through the phone line from WFAR.
Well, there shouldn't be a frequency shift. It should be the same. So it should be from the station itself.
Hank.
Because I've got you dialed in on the ham radio here, dear, and you're 300 cycles high.
Now, does that mean if you put it on 5073, you can hear it fine?
You can hear it, but it's still overmodulated.
It's still overmodulated.
That's a totally adjustable at the radio station also.
Oh,
it
man.
It should be adjustable at your end where you're broadcasting from.
All right. If Nicholas is hearing us right now, Nicholas, would you come online and let us know what might be going on? Hanks.
Hope that helps you, Jackie.
Thanks so much, and thanks for the cookies.
You're more than welcome.
And your very generous donation for the broadcast.
Have a good broadcast.
Thanks. We'll see if we can get this fixed.
Good.
Bye-bye, Hank. Well, Alan?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Usually, Nicholas is there when we're on... when we're on the air,
yeah.
You know what you might do if you would? Give our listeners your address and everything. Tell them about the book. Let me see if I can make a call because Nicholas isn't coming online, which might mean he isn't there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is originating from WFAR or from WWCR.
That's the radio station, yeah.
Well, they're two...
They're the ones who put the signal on 5070 or wherever else they want to.
You mean it would be... See, we're broadcasting... We're actually going through WFAR.
Uh-huh.
And then they send it over to WWCR.
Yeah. But then WWCR is responsible for broadcasting... on the frequency you're supposed to be on.
Okay.
And you're 5073, and it's still muffled, but that's the strongest signal, which tells you that's where they've pointed it to, is 5073.
And that Hank's in Chicago. Eleanor is in...
Hamilton.
Hamilton, Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is across the board. Well, do you want to give this a try? You go ahead and give our listeners your address again,
yeah.
And mention the book, and I'll be back. I'll use another phone line,
okay.
And see if I can find out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll be back.
Okay, if anyone wants to look at these three booklets that I've written up, the third one I'm just finishing this week, and it'll be mailed out next week. They're going for $25 each, and if you want them, send a postal money order, which you get from your post office, and it has to be an international money order to be cashed in Canada. And my name is Alan Watt, which is W-A-T-T, and the address is Site 41, which is SITE 41, Box 4, Estaire, which is Estaire, Ontario, Canada. Postal code is P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1. So that's Site 41, Box 4, Estaire, Ontario, Canada, P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1. And what I've put in these books, the first two are basically a sort of gestalt type of education into all that's happening around you, which you don't really see, in a sense. You see them on an exoteric level. I show you the esoteric, and it helps to get the reader to participate in what he's reading, because you'll find that certain cogs in your brain start to mesh together and start making sense of what's really going on. The third one goes into the religions, what was behind the religions. You'll find the same story, esoteric story, is contained within every major religion, known to the high priests in every major religion, whether it's Judaism, Brahmanism, whatever, it's all the same at the top. And of course the world has been run, as they say in the Kabbalah and other major books out there, for 6,000 years with the great work, as they call it, commencing around 4,000 BC. The great work was to take over the world and perfect that which was left imperfect, and by that they mean perfecting wild nature into nature which they can control through science, and ultimately restructuring man, rebuilding man and woman in the way that the scientists deem fit for their purpose. And that's what's called the great work. And of course, as we all know, with the talk of brain implants, which they do have ready to go, and cybernetics to create people for special jobs, various tasks and so on, and actually cloning thrown in there, you can see that that's what they've been heading for all this time. The complete reshaping of the world in which we live, through the understanding of nature or science, really, and the refiguring or rebuilding of human-type specialized beings, which the elite will deem necessary for the elite's survival. If you go into Charles Galton Darwin's book, the grandson of Charles Darwin, he wrote a book in the 1950s called The Next Million Years, and he said there were simply too many people from the working class types, the lower classes as he called them, and that they wouldn't be necessary in the future which science had already mapped out. So he said they'd have to start eliminating the lower gene pools which they didn't need, and the rest would be altered for specialized jobs to serve the elite. He himself, of course, believed he was one of them, and he said, we, the elite, will not be altered ourselves, because we are steering the ship, we are guiding the ship, and we need our survival capabilities in order to take the world where we want it to go, whereas the rest of the people, the workers, will not need that ability in their brain, that part of the brain that gives you your survival capabilities, because the state will be taking care of all the problems for them. And of course, in a socialized system, which is almost worldwide today, you'll find that most of your problems, actually most of your decision making, is already taken care of by governmental departments. And what you're left with is a sort of narrow avenue where you can still use self-will and make your own decisions. The rest of them are really made for you. And in fact, you're born into their system where debt, the owing of debt, the paying of debt, all of this stuff has already been done by previous generations. And according to Jefferson, and the Old Testament, anyone born into a debt is therefore a slave. And Charles Galton Darwin, in his book The Next Million Years, actually says that. He said every type of system in this civilization has been based on slavery, and we are simply making a more perfect form of slavery. So it isn't that your system is changing. The fact is, it was never your system. You were simply born into a part of it you got used to, and the true owners are simply upgrading their system to the next phase. So I go through this in my writings, and I quote other authors too who were part of the same structure. And what you find is that pretty well every major event in your lifetime that's happened to any country in the world, you'll find that these major events were planned long before you were born, and they were discussed by very high level groups of very wealthy people, and you're simply living the script. And it's no accident that today, into this millennium, this new millennium, we kicked it off really with a completely different structure of totalitarianism coming in order to ram through the scientific socialism, as they call it, down our throats, under the guise of terrorism.
I'm back here, Alan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I put a call in to Nicholas, wasn't able to get any answer at WWCR, so we'll see what happens. I turned on my radio, the Grundig, my mm-hmm. shortwave radio.
Yeah.
And when I put it up to 5.073, uh-huh. I could hear you pretty good.
Okay.
And it didn't sound overmodulated to me.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So maybe
you're on 5073.
Maybe, yeah. Uh-huh. And it wasn't even, I mean, I could actually still make you out
uh-huh.
on 5070, but it was better at 5073. Mm-hmm. Folks, if you're listening on the shortwave and you can hear us, would you be willing to give us a quick call? Just to give us a signal report so we know. I'll be able to discuss this with WFAR and WWCR. Maybe we can find out what the heck is going on. So, Alan, did you want to continue with your train of thought there, hon?
Yeah, I pretty well came to it. I was telling the people that all the major things that are happening now and have been through their lifetime.
Hi, Jackie.
There's Nicholas.
Uh-huh.
Nicholas.
Yeah, I was listening to you after I got your page.
Oh, thank you very much. And we've got a couple of reports. It's on shortwave, one from Canada, one from Chicago, that it's coming in over, it sounds like it's overmodulated.
Okay.
And I don't know if that originates from WFAR, or if it's from WWCR, and is there a way that you can get a hold of their engineer?
Well, I will call them right now.
Thank you. How is it coming across? How does it sound?
Everything looks good here. I'm monitoring the satellite and the internet, and
yes.
Everything sounds real good.
And we're not overmodulating from here.
No, not at all. Okay. As you said, you listened yourself, and he was coming in clear, so it might be a locality problem.
Okay, could be a local thing.
Yeah, most likely it is. I mean, if you're hearing it clear.
In Chicago and in Canada both.
Okay, but I'll call him and get him to look at it.
Nicholas.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's still overmodulated up here. It's all crackly and distorted.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it is localized then, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
I could understand what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello. This is Eugene in Indiana.
Hi, Gene.
Hi. I'm hearing your broadcast, and you wanted to... Confirmation about the distortion.
Yes.
And you are coming in muffled and distorted, as you sometimes do. And
okay.
That's not good. You've been having this trouble for too long.
Well, I don't know. And then I turned it on here, and I could understand Alan fine.
Yeah.
Now, are both of us sounding distorted?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, it could be some localized problem then. Because, well...
It sounds to me like an audio problem. Like the one engineer at WWCR that said it was due to the pickup off the internet that he's using.
No, they're not picking it up off the internet. They're pushing it right through the phone lines now.
Oh, they are?
Yes.
Well, maybe that's one of the reasons then. Whatever the reason to pick it up, it's not good.
Well, some people are getting it. That's the point, Gene. So, but thank you for your call, dear.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks.
All right.
All right, folks. I'm sorry about this. I don't know how many of you can hear us and how many can't. I will be back after this break.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. Don't do internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
All right, folks, we're back here with you. And we just got a call from Lily, and she said the same thing that Hank did. And I found out the same thing, too. If you can move, if you can move your frequency one step at a time. I went up to 5073, and Alan sounded clear as a bell to me, or as clear as a bell as we get shortwave here. And Lily said the same thing. So maybe, I don't know, Alan.
Yeah, it's I know up here it's like a scratching, it's true, it's like a Geiger counter.
Maybe we have rats.
Yeah. Well, there's lots of rats out there, that's true. Yeah. Maybe gnawing on the wires.
Had a friend call today. He's been listening for a little while. And he said that he might talk. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Jackie, it's your old friend Tim here in the southern
of
New York.
Oh, Tim, I was just going to talk about you. I'm glad you called.
Oh, well, I probably could have heard it, but boy, you sound terrible tonight.
Yep, that's what I'm hearing.
Oh, my God. And I tried tuning up to 5073 on the old-time shortwave and even throwing it off frequency. It makes it a little bit better, but...
Uh-huh.
I know it's always hard to understand Alan. But even your sweet voice was really, really, really hard to make out, so you got some audio problems there.
Okay. Well, you had said that you had a question you wanted to ask Alan.
Jackie.
I don't remember what it was anymore.
I'll tell you what it was. Nicholas?
Yes. I did contact WWCR. They said it was overmodulated. They turned it down.
Oh.
Okay.
So aren't they supposed to be monitoring that, Nicholas?
Yes, they are.
Thank you very much.
Okay. You're welcome.
Thank you so much. All right. Maybe this guy, they did, he just talked to WWCR and they said it was overmodulating and they turned it down. So,
it's
Tim,
very nice of them at WWCR.
Yeah, right. At $140 an hour, 30 minutes into it.
Normally, they're really good, Jackie, at trying to get the best signal out all the time. And, you know, it seems like they always take pride in their stuff. It just seems kind of weird that they let it slip through tonight. I wouldn't pay tonight's bill.
Well, I'm going to make a note of this. Thanks. Well, I'll tell you what you said today that you would like to ask Alan.
Okay.
Because you are not a stupid person, as we both know, but you've been uninformed. And you said that you would like for him to give you, maybe for the person who's just waking up. Well, how did you put that? For the average Joe?
or the blue collar guy?
The blue collar guy. You asked the question, Tim.
I think my question was, Alan, what are the top five things that you would tell a regular old blue collar person just starting to wake up? What would you want them to know?
Well, the first thing
is Tim.
Yes.
The way we're set up here, you have to listen off air, honey. I mean,
of course, I'm on
off the phone.
I'm on internet because I couldn't make out. Let me try WWCR again.
Okay, cool. Well, you'll be able to hear his answer. Yeah, check it and see how it.
All right, I want to try tuning it up, see what happens.
Okay, thank you, Tim.
All right, good night.
Good night, honey.
Yeah. Well, the first thing he's got to know is that if you've classified yourself as blue collar, you've already put yourself in a category. Everyone puts themselves into a pre-made category in the system.
You mean a category that's been made for them?
Uh-huh. Because the entire system is fake. I mean, it's all. There's nothing natural in the system.
Would you repeat that again in case Tim wasn't able to hear it yet?
Yeah. As I say, the first thing is not to put yourself in a category. Whether it's blue collar or white collar or whatever.
Or in other words, don't label yourself.
Yes, because that's what they want you to do is to have a certain impression of who you are, and that's all that you are, and here you are in this level. And of course, that keeps you submissive really to the system and to the ones who actually run the system. It puts you in an inferior position. By rights, everyone who's born technically is a sovereign unless they give it away. And you give it away unknowingly through the labels that you allow to be put on yourself. As I say, there's nothing...
In other words, calling ourselves a Democrat, a Republican, a conservative, a liberal,
yeah,
a this, a
left,
that.
Left, right, whatever.
Left, right,
up, down, uh-huh.
Okay, thank you. That's wonderful.
And that's the first part of it. The second part is that when a person wakes up to the beginnings of it all, they think that the system that they're used to has been taken over. In reality, the system they were born in was still created for them by the elite, and it had a purpose to serve, and the same elite are simply upgrading their system to the next part. And you're not comfortable with it because you're just simply not used to it. Because this system has been faked from the beginning. It's all based on money and a form of slavery, which with the use of money, it's more hidden, it's sophisticated, as Charles Galton Darwin said. But when you end up paying 40% or more of your earnings back in taxes, openly and hidden taxes and property taxes, you are in fact simply a slave who's feeding himself, clothing himself, and making sure he can get to work. Whereas in the old days, they had slave masters who had to throw the clothes at you and once in a while a pair of shoes and so on. So it's a more sophisticated form of slavery. And we have to ask ourselves, is that why we're here? To serve?
In other words... Mm-hmm. The whole, like, American dream,
mm-hmm.
I could relate this to myself.
Yeah.
That it isn't that there was the dream was given to us,
mm-hmm.
and the system that we've been living in, as you said, it's a system that has... It's a controlled system, in other words.
Totally, yeah.
Totally controlled, mm-hmm. in every aspect.
Yes.
In entertainment, in fashion,
yes. mm-hmm.
in religion, in education,
mm-hmm.
In history,
mm-hmm.
and everything that we've ever thought we knew.
That's right, and it also alters what you think of as purpose in life. Because really, you're confined to a very narrow channel as far as what you think are free choices, because all the other choices really have been made for you before you were even born. The system is already in effect. The debt system is already there. You're born into owing a debt that you did not incur. And that's how the slavery system worked in the Old Testament. If the debtor who was in bondage to pay off a debt, had children while he was still in debt, then those children then belonged to the slave master as well. That's traditional. That is traditional. And so, as Jefferson said, if a generation is born owing a debt incurred by a previous generation, then those children are actually slaves. So, you know, this is well understood by the ones at the top.
And you know, that's a tough pill to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
And people who've listened to the broadcast with you for a long time, they've got it, or they're beginning to get it. They're in a stage of getting it.
Mm-hmm.
We all are. But I know for myself, this was, you know, when we first were, well, you and I talked for about 6 months
mm-hmm.
before you even came on the air with us, and you've been coming on the air off and on since then. But when it finally, really, when I finally got it, that everything that we thought we knew was a lie, and all of this wonderful American dream, this is the greatest country in the world, we're free, we have a constitution, et cetera, et cetera. It was tough, Alan.
Yeah.
And I went through a period of disorientation that was incredible,
mm-hmm.
where everything looked foreign to me. It was almost as though I were in another world or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to say this to Tim and to any of our listeners who are fairly new. And if you don't, if you haven't ordered Alan's books, I'll tell you what, folks, it'll take you a long way into what we've been talking about over these past several years.
It's interesting, too, because I see that the third thing you'll find is that you go through a death, a form of dying.
Huh.
And you go through all the processes of it when you find out that democracy is a big lie. and that you really have no say in anything, because everything's been decided by people you'll never meet or even know of.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go through the same stages of depression and so on as any other death, as you let go of the old and then begin to see what's really there. So that's probably the third thing that happens. The fourth thing to do, I would definitely say, is to get a hold of some old books by people like Bertrand Russell, who worked for this establishment that planned the future, because the world is just one big business plan.
And this would planning. Be this would be the more recent
mm-hmm.
past.
Yes, he wrote a book to do with education and how the conditioning process would be worked on the minds of the young, and in such a fashion that the parental input would be null and void, because the indoctrination from kindergarten onwards would be introduced in a very scientific way, and it would really take hold of in the minds of the children, so that when they went home at night, no matter what the parents said, the children would take the indoctrination from the school as a priori in their dealing with things. And that book that he put out back in the early 1900s, from his own experimental schools that he was given permission to set up in Britain, is called Education and the Good Life. That was the title of it. And another one that he wrote was The Roads to Freedom. And in both of those books, he goes through the whole future as we've actually seen it occur since then. And he was part of the planning committee for British royalty and nobility. He's Lord Bertrand Russell. And he saw nothing wrong in the small elite, the intellectual elite and the scientific elite, having the right to dominate the world and all the people in it.
And what would the title of that book mean to him, Roads to Freedom?
It was their freedom.
Freedom from what?
They've always been terrified of the masses. That's why you have such incredible amounts of entertainment and hobbies and sports and so on to keep everyone occupied and to get rid of their any angry tendencies that can be played out on a field. They've always been terrified of people actually truly being awake and seeing what was really going on. So they've always been terrified of the masses, and quite rightly so, because if the masses could understand what had been happening to them and what is happening to them today, I wouldn't like to be in the shoes of any of the elite.
And they wouldn't like to be in their shoes either, would they?
That's correct. And that's why they're spraying the skies, they're killing off people. They've gone too far to turn back now. They can't come out and admit what they've been doing. But the signs are all around us. With apparently even the UN has come out and admitted that the leading cause of death now is bronchial problems and pneumonia. So they know what they're doing, and they can't come out and on any media and tell you this now. They've gone too far. The sperm count in the West is down by 75%. In other words, men are three-quarters sterile from what they were in 1950. And it's about time that the UN comes out next month and tells us the next statistic, because they do it every year.
Uh-huh.
So their plan is working. And now, of course, with the next phase, they plan... Bertrand Russell goes into this whole thing from the 1900s, early 1900s. That they would create different types of humans for specialized work. And he goes into it in a book called The Impact of Science on Society. He outlines all of this cybernetic type, genetic manipulation, and the need to eradicate, again, the part of your brain, for the masses, that is, which leads to your survival capabilities. It's your survival capabilities they're worried about. Because if they were working, you would know what's happening to those around you and yourself.
What part of the brain are we talking about?
Basically, it's the part where all your intuition is based.
Is that the right side?
It connects with them, but it really is. They call it the primitive part. I mean, all animals should have that. All wild animals have it because they can sense what's going on, and it allows them to survive.
But you said at one time that, for example, that there, and I always forget whether it's the left or right side.
Yeah.
One side is logic,
yeah,
and knowledge, etc. Mm-hmm. The other side is creativity, intuition.
Yeah.
Which side is which?
Yeah, the right is emotion and so on.
The right is right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I could remember that then.
But they're all connected. All parts of your brain are still connected to that part, which is your basic survival center, and that should connect with both, so that both of those sides can go into action and save your life.
Yeah.
But if you notice today, people are so passive, and nothing's bothering them really. Most people, and they'll even complain about the cost of gasoline. And when you see dictatorial measures being taken to take away all rights and freedoms, really amongst the majority of the public, there's no real problem with it. Well, that's not natural, you see. Plato went into that over 2,400 years ago. He said that we domesticate animals, he says, to eradicate their wildness and their survival capabilities. That's what a domesticated animal is. It's placid and tame. And it doesn't have the intuitions of its impending doom, you might say. And, of course, that's what he suggested that they actually do to people, breed them the same way and breed out the aggressive tendencies which would allow them to be free. So this is well understood. It's been discussed by many think tanks over the last 100 years or so. And they're actually implementing it through scientific methods.
And I think it's important for our newer listeners,
mm-hmm,
when you say, okay, this has been implemented over the past 100 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is just another phase of a system that has, but it seems to go, it takes itself in cycles. It seems,
yeah.
Alan.
What I've done, I mean, a long time ago, the Egyptians had the diet of the slaves down to a very fine art. They knew exactly what to feed them, what not to feed them, to make them obedient, sluggish of thought, but efficient enough to work, not too fit and healthy so they could run off. So this was, has been tried by the Egyptians. The East India Company also used those techniques in its plantations. Malthus, who wrote the treaty or the treatise on population and population control, also wrote in his book about feeding certain things to the people so that they'd be sluggish of mind but very obedient.
And so did Charles Dalton Garwin.
Same thing.
Charles Galton Garwin.
And of course, now we see that they've gone for the genetically modified food, which has taken over everything. And Monsanto, who is one of the biggest producers of the modified food, one of its companies, its subsidiary companies, is called Sierra Pharmaceuticals. And they work with the parent company on the modified food. Now, Sierra Company, that's S-E-A-R-L-E, are one of the main leaders in psychotropic drugs for the psychiatric industry. So what on earth are specialists who normally make drugs which tranquilize people working with the food producers for? And I think the answer is pretty obvious to everybody.
Didn't you say that, was it, who was it that said one of the people in the U.S. government that they would spray...
That was Rumsfeld.
Rumsfeld.
Mm-hmm.
That they would actually spray a Prozac-like aerosol in the air if there was another terrorist attack? Is that what
he was asked right after 9/11, and it was an American station, probably CNN, but they probably didn't show it in the States, this part of it, where a reporter asked them, how are you going to deal with another strike in another city where there could be widespread panic throughout the whole city? And he said, we have plenty, he said, of aerosolized Valium and Prozac, which we can spray directly from the air, which will calm the people down to such an extent that they'll be kept out of a panic situation. And when he said it, I thought, well, that's probably what they've been doing all along in the spraying.
That's right.
Because if I was one of them, and I wanted to bring the world through this incredible transition where amongst the few choices left, you can at least pick your own mate to breed with, and they want to stop even that from occurring. And I was going to make the people of the future modify them just as much as I've modified the food. They call it genetic enhancement. If I was going to do all of these massive changes, I would want the public to be tranquilized too. And of course, it would make perfect sense. That's what they're doing.
We have number five to do before we go off the air.
Yes. Well, number five is when you reassess yourself and who you are and where you stand in position with all those around you, and you reshape all of your priorities, because they must obviously be recategorized. And everyone, I think, goes through the same stages right up to there, where you have to decide what really is important to you as an individual, with very limited choices really in life, and is it the material world that you're totally attached to, or is there something else inside of you which will push you off in another direction, or stand up and say no when the time comes for you? It's a decision time, in other words, you will come to. Most people will take the ID card, which is only the precursor to the chip, which is implanted, and it's already there. They've admitted that. Most people will take all of this, hoping that they can hang on to those material things, their house, vehicles, and all this stuff. And it's a vain hope, because these characters have said in all of their books that in the world that they're creating with human habitat areas, there will be no private property. There will be no private property, There will be no public, no private transportation allowed. That's on the UN website, by the way, under those habitat areas. So even though you think you're trying to save what you have, you have to accept the fact that the people who are running this world, even if you take the card and then take the chip, you're not going to be allowed to keep that stuff anyway.
You know what?
Yeah.
I realized that when I got involved in this,
mm-hmm.
when it hit me, and I said, my awakening was the first Iraq War, Poppy Bush talking about the New World Order, the gentler, kinder world that we're going to live in, and the Iraq War, which didn't make sense at all to me, why we were there.
Mm-hmm.
But when it hit me, it was just like a two-by-four across my head. And what I realized, and there were people, because, you know, I owned a business, and it was quite a successful business, a small business, but it did very well. And the talk about me was, and this was even in towns around Springfield, that I got, you know, the echoes of what was being said. Oh, I heard she's really gone off the deep end. And what I realized is that if everybody was like me, because the way I was then was, you know, my girls were grown, I was doing my business and taking tap lessons and my oil painting and playing Trivial Pursuit on Friday nights and et cetera, et cetera. And I realized, literally, like a light bulb, if everybody's like me, because I am a perfect example of the problem, that nobody's going to have anything. I won't have a business. Nobody will have a business. And that was, it's because I began to neglect my business. I just never went there anymore. I had people working for me, Alan, that I didn't even know.
Yeah.
And by the time I sold it for a pittance of what it had been worth, because I had neglected it so, but there wasn't anything more important to me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized that.
Yeah.
Geez, the time does fly. We had a good half hour. I'm glad Tim called, and because the questions that he asked, I think. And your number five, reassess ourselves.
Yeah.
What is our purpose? Why are we here? And who are we?
Mm-hmm.
Know thyself.
Yeah.
Basically is what it is. Alan, thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much for being with us tonight. Folks, this broadcast is brought to you by you. And we need your help here. If you'll take your pen in your hand, you'll get my address again. We will see you Monday, and have a lovely Memorial Day weekend. Good night, folks. Night, Alan.
Good night.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network.